Okay, Moncon McGann is here now, I'm delighted to say, and I've got a Leaving Cert type question for you, Moncon. Are you ready? Here goes. There's more to Ibiza than clubbing and all-night raves. Discuss.
That's exactly what I want to discuss. Perfect. The perfect question came up that I had done all my cogging for, my
brain. Right, very good.
Yes, so it can be hard to find everything that is beyond the clubbing and the sort of the debauched all-night dancing, but it's there. And so maybe for once, I'm going to give out specific examples today, because actually if you go online, you're just going to be brought back to sort of the mad wild havens in San Antonio and in Plata and then Bosso. But the others are nearby. Like, it's a pretty small island. Ibiza, 40 kilometres wide by about 20 kilometres. So it's pretty intimate, pretty small, but it's just all the tourists who go there, the 6 million tourists who go there, get funnelled in to these sort of party zones where everyone is lycra clad.
6 million in any one given year, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And how big is the place? I've never been there.
No, so it's 40 kilometres wide, long by 20 kilometres wide, and there's only, there's less than 200,000 people living in it. It's right. It's tiny. And the islanders obviously have depended. So first, I should give it to you. In the 60s, this was idyll, this paradise idyll for 60s dropouts, for pure idealists, for sort of hippies to go there and to just relive the life. It was a Catalonian outpost, an outpost of Catalonian culture in Spain, or well, on the islands off the east coast of Spain in the Balearic Islands, and it was just perfection. It was heaven. And then a few of them started getting the party scene, the drug scene. And locals were obviously, I mean, this is a very traditional, very Catholic place, so locals were a bit dubious, but then they've earned their money. They've earned huge money over the last few decades, until 2011. Something massive happened in 2011.
What happened in 2011?
Forest fires.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Forest fires ravaged the island, and they suddenly realised we have no water left in our aquifers. Well, I mean, our aquifers are dangerously low, because they had been using all that water basically for pools, for tourism, for showers, for all the tourists coming and having 3 showers a day.
And probably a lot of what you might call irrigation that wasn't necessary for the tourists.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So they decided, and so they didn't have the water to put out the fires. So France and Spain sent the planes full of water. But they said, the French and Spain fire brigade unit said, we're not going to come next time. You're going to have to sort this out yourself. So all of the islanders made this decision. We're going to have to first cut back the brush. They had let all of their forest land and all of their wonderful agriculture land go wild. They didn't need it, because all the money was coming from those few dens of iniquity, these few hotspots of nightclubbing in the south and in the west. So there was a rule made, everyone had to make sure all your land was cut back every year. So they went into the fields and they discovered this wealth of nut trees and fruit trees and vegetable beds from right up until the mid-80s, when they were an independent country, making their own money. Because as a Catalonian culture, particularly during the Franco years, Franco did not look kindly at this sort of slightly rebel group. So they weren't getting support from Spain. So they were independent, which is why the original 60s people went there. So anyway, this change happened, and it was perfectly symbolised by something that happened around that time. Jersey Shore, you know, the MTV series, we're going to do another series in Ibiza, basically hamming it up, looking at that sort of crazy drinking, drug, dancing lifestyle. And 23,000 people out of a population at the time of 130,000 signed a petition saying, no, MTV isn't allowed. They decided, let's forget all that dependence we've had on the money of this tourism. Let's try and go towards a different way. Right. So now that sort of, it's in train. I mean, you'll still find, you know, the party hangouts. But
all right, okay. So kind of a sustainability future is what they...
Exactly.
And that's from 10 years ago or so, whatever,
yeah, yeah.
9 years ago.
That's it.
Okay, so what kind of tourism is Ibiza turning towards now?
So that's why I'm having to give sort of specific examples, because I can't say it's absolutely widespread, but you can go and have a holiday in Ibiza where you are just focused on these ecological, organic, sustainable type places. Places like Can Marti, which is like a 400-year-old farm building, a network of farmhouses, which have like 3 guest apartments and a little tourist cottage. It's been run, it's actually run by a Swiss family, but on totally sort of organic sustainability principles. So like they're, well, first the old house, the 400-year-old house uses natural natural canarial architectural features to cool the house, you know, pre-air conditioning. These sort of ideas that actually came, the Arabs brought this, Muslim culture brought these ways of living in hot places but maintaining a cool place. All their rainwater is recycled, their wastewater irrigates the fruit trees, they have solar panels, they have a pool, but it's a chemically free pool, a sort of naturally cleaning pool. And then the food you're eating in Canmarty is all grown there. So there's beans, there's lemons, grapes, tomatoes, strawberries, saffron, almonds, olives and carob. And even if you're not staying there, because the rooms get booked out, go and visit. Like, there's a farm shop and it just looks like this heaven. And they still, as I said, they have their pool, they have their deck chairs, but it's just all like natural gardens all around you rather than this irrigated, manicured sort of false place.
Okay, that's Canmarty.
Yeah. Then other places that are really focusing on growing the food again rather than importing it all by ship and by plane from Spain are La Paloma, which is it's an organic Mediterranean restaurant on this old farm. And it's just, you know what it looks a bit like? It looks a bit like these really cool hangouts outside and around San Francisco. Like in a previous chat, we talked about Mendocino and Noma and these places around San Francisco. This is a bit like this. Like gorgeous little like bijou delicatessens and cafes and canteens in a local farm, and you're surrounded, particularly in that one in La Paloma, by all the orange and the lemon and the tangerine trees and the vegetables that you're going to eat on your plate. Also a really good one is Aubergine, which is just next to the little village. Is it a village? It's more a crossroads, called Saint Michel de Balançant, and there's a farmer's market there. So all the farmers go bring their crops here because it's a major crossroads. Well, major, it's just two tiny roads, but it's, you know, inland Ibiza is still very undeveloped.
Saying the food scene is very big there in terms of anybody who might go. Are you saying it's very big there in terms of export?
No. It's still pretty intimate. And it's still, I mean, to be fair, this is only starting out. They depended so much on the big money, you know, on the tourist money.
Yeah, I'm just
so
saying, like, if they recaptured their own island, if you like, and now they have it back, surely the amount of money they're making is a heck of a lot less than before, and they're very happy with that, are they?
Exactly, yeah, right, they are. Okay. I mean, they realised the alternative wasn't sustainable. There was going to be another forest fire in a few years, so it's almost been forced on them, but the benefits have been huge. Like, there's a great place, there's a farm, again, one of the sort of pioneers of this taking back Ibiza for themselves was Maria Mari Colomar, and she's got this Can Muson. Can just is the Catalan word for house, so the house of Muson. It's an organic farm near Santa Eulària. A lot of people know Santa Eulària because it's near all the tourist places, and you book through Airbnb, but as part of it, if you stay for a week, she will give you 8 hours of courses teaching you the techniques that you need to learn, like in wood fired baking or goat's cheese making or creating flan, which is the traditional flan, the traditional sort of dessert of that area. And again, she's selling in her shop and she's serving to you if you're staying there all her local chorizos that she's making, her soaps, her honeys, her padron peppers, my favourite.
Well,
Spanish,
what's the
peppers.
Agroturismo?
The agroturismo is a thing you'll find all throughout Spain, and you'll find it in the Balearic Islands as well. And it's basically a farm. Well, the traditional idea was that it was a farm who allowed people in, like a gîte in France. But a lot of the agroturismos in France and on the Balearic Islands, they're false. They're actually, they claim it's a farm, but it's a newly built hotel with a fake farm around it and manicured lawns and kind of chemically treated swimming pools. And the real thing will always be a bit muckier and dirtier, I think. And if you want to get mucky and dirty, like, a lot of people can't handle like 100% eco, 100% radical green. Casita Verde, it's this sort of total sort of ragbag commune of buildings made of bottles, of sort of bits of wood, of straw bale, of recycled anything, of plastic crates. And it's been going for about 20 years, and they're basically trying to redesign a totally sustainable place.
Going for 20 years sounds like it's going back to pre-hedonistic days, though, as well.
Exactly. Oh, no, these are very solemn, deep people. They would have done their drugs and their partying way back, like in the 60s. It's probably too full-on for some people, but if you want a glimpse into that other world, they open on a Sunday, and you can go for a tour of the compost toilets and the sustainable this and the wind and the solar, and then they party. So you go for your tour, you have dinner of all the food that's on the farm. But the one interesting thing about them, they're pioneering this thing of bringing back carob. So one of a major form of farming in Ibithalonga was carob. I don't know, carob.
It's a tree, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's these big, long, they look like broad beans, black broad beans, and they have these big beans inside it. And it tastes sort of like chocolates. You know, in health food shops, instead of chocolate, you'll get these carob nut bars. They're nice, but they are... In Ibiza, they weren't consumed for humans. They were the main fodder for donkeys and goats. But now they're like considered a superfood for humans. They have like enormously high amounts of iron, potassium, calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, of copper. And Ibiza are saying, and I know you can extract things that are really good for medicine. So Ibiza are saying, if we go back to, I mean, the carob trees are everywhere, but you don't see them because they're overgrown with just wilderness. If we go back to farming those, that can be, we can earn the same amount of money now because actually your labs and sort of the high-end health food industry want those. So it's interesting to see a place that is changing. The one place that was like at the frontier of my knowledge, and I'm pretty eco, do you know, it was the first time I went, I was there for a week and every day I ate in a raw food restaurant. So that's like breakfast. You go and you have your breakfast and your porridge is raw. Your pancakes are raw. Now, I didn't even know what that was and it sounded disgusting, do you know? But the food is phenomenal. So let's say the raw porridge is basically unboiled almonds and coconut mixed up with sort of gruel. It's delicious. The pancake is somehow they're mixing walnut and banana and something else and making these food. There's a famous vegetarian cafe in Cork called Cafe Paradiso. And when it opened in the 90s, people could not believe that you could have a meal of vegetarian. I mean, the amount of people go to Cafe Paradiso think this is delicious. So anyway, Wild Beats, this place in St. Gertrudis.
Just as a matter of interest, if you're going around all these places and checking all the bits out that you're talking about here in terms of Ibiza, I mean, are there nice beaches as well and all that sort of stuff?
Amazing beaches. And one part of me, though, doesn't want to reveal the beaches because one of the great pleasures of going around Ibiza in this way, you know, you definitely need a car because you're covering a lot of ground to find these few places. It's not like this is not a resort holiday. But the key thing then is to stumble upon little beaches, particularly in that whole northern section where the tourists aren't really. Every little cove, every little canyon and sea inlet will have either not so much amazing sand beaches, but these great little rock beaches where you're going in and out of caves and you have sea arches. And so I'd love people to discover them, but otherwise you'll find there's amazing websites, you know, of the hidden beaches of Ibiza. So
okay, then what about sightseeing, which people like to do? Of course, well, monuments, museums, all that.
Yeah, that's all there. And I suppose the main place you're going to find it is in the capital. The capital of Ibiza is called Ibiza, but really the old town of that is called Daltvilla. And in terms of really powerfully fortified harbours, bastions that are well preserved. Probably the best one in Europe is La Valletta in Malta. And I claim that Daltvilla is up at that level. So it's basically this rock-constructed, fortified bastion, mostly from the 16th century, of twisting cobbled lanes and impregnable fortress houses that had to withstand attack from everyone. Basically, in the 16th century, it was more mainly pirates and Berbers. But before that, the Turkish, the Ottomans, the French, everyone had attacked. Like these Balearic Islands in the middle of the Mediterranean, prime fertile islands. Everyone at some point wanted them. So once, I mean, when you're in that Daltvilla, the old, like I could say like our Temple Bar, but our Temple Bar is such a weak version of it, but the old traditional heart centre of the town, it's just full. They've managed, like it's been UNESCO preserved because so much of it has remained. The old chapels, the museums, the galleries, the palaces. And what's interesting is you see all the cultures that have taken over this island in the past. Like we now think it's sort of English, basically party goers. But the Ibiza people, the Catalan people of Ibiza, have managed to withstand the Carthaginians, the Romans, the North Africans, the Moors. Everyone's been there. The English will move on too, you know. They're all just...
So all those programs you see about UK types puking on the whatever are all gone now. And they've beaten them off.
They've seen worse. They've seen Phoenicians killings. They've seen Greeks. Yeah. It's not going to put them out so much. Some really good museums in the area are the Medina Yabissa, which is a museum into the whole Arab and Moorish culture of the island.
And there's no problem with going to anything that you've talked about here because of the fact that it's how many kilometres by how many kilometres?
Yeah, 40 kilometres.
Well, if you have a car,
kilometers.
You're laughing.
Exactly, yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's a pretty intimate place. But most people who go to Ibiza don't ever rent a car because they're going to be too, you know, drunk or drugged. Yeah. They're just going straight to the resort and they're going for the sunset or the sunrise on a beautiful
When you
cove.
Say the resort, is the resort in the capital? I never even knew the capital of Ibiza was called Ibiza. Is that what the resorts are? They're all right around there or are they further away?
Yeah, no, they're near there. They're more to the south and slightly to the west of there.
And they're still happening and music and drum and bass and loudness
still going,
DJs and it mightn't be Paris Hilton there pretending to be a DJ, but like, you know, The big guys are there.
Exactly. Yeah. You'll still see Naomi Campbell, you know, going for her beach holiday there. Yeah, if you want, like, if the sort of those areas where you'll still find the mega yachts, the famous ones are Amnesia, which is in, it's on Santa Antonia Road in Santa Rafael. Now, you don't need directions because you're going to hear the boom, boom, boom day and night from right, that place. Pacha was obviously the legendary one that all these multi-million DJs would come in to do a set in. That's in Avenida 8 de Augusta in Ibiza town itself. Es Paradis in San Antonio. Still huge queues outside them. Still men buffed in their T-shirts, you know, and they're in ready for a night. One good thing, though, to do in Ibiza, if you're going there, is go there to, you know, to chill out, to find these hidden beaches, to eat good food, but to learn Spanish too. You can learn Spanish really affordably there because, as I said, they have that island culture that is not about, like, they're not on city rates. There's very little expense in Ibiza, which is why it was a paradise. So you can go for, you can have a week of private lessons, five private lessons for €210 a week in the Instituto de Idiomas in Ibiza. Or otherwise, if you do group lessons, you can get 20 lessons for €225, 20 lessons a week. Like, if you did 3 weeks there, having 20 lessons each week, paying.
But is there an awful lot of what you're talking about that people might go away for 2 weeks in the month of August or something and go to sort of what I will call a mainland or something, and then they might go to Ibiza within those 2 weeks for, say, 3 or 4 days, and there's packages?
No, I haven't come
across
that.
Because I've heard of the Ibiza 4 day challenge.
Yes, yeah, that works brilliantly. So it's a new people trying to have a new way of exploring Ibiza. And so is this, the challenge is basically, can you circumnavigate Ibiza in 4 days? And it's part of a package. So it costs about €895.
In what, a bus?
Everything, no. Walking, cycling, swimming, kayaking. Right. So you start off like on the first day and you go from Ibiza town to Las Salinas. Las Salinas is the old salt flats. Well, there's still salt is still being taken in the traditional way from these salt flats, an amazing wildlife reserve for migratory birds and marine organisms. So you go there 65 kilometres on a bike, and then you kayak for about 10 kilometres to these magical caves, to a secret location where you stay overnight and you have like dinner under the stars.
Stay overnight or sleep overnight?
You sleep overnight the stars, there with campfire, like, and dinner. The second day, a long kayak, 30-kilometer kayak, and then this right under these cliffs, 350-meter-high cliffs into beautiful bays. Then you go hiking, then you walk, and so every day until finally the final day, it's like a 50-kilometer cycle home down through forest lanes back to Ibiza. It's a beautiful, like, nothing of that is too challenging. We can all just about manage a 25k hike. It's a bit sore, but
and that's 4 days at about 900.
Exactly.
Quid.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lovely way of doing it. But there's now, I mean, because of this new look of Ibiza, the government there has opened up walking and hiking trails right throughout the island. And again, the place I would encourage people to go is go up to the north and the northwest. That's this sort of unknown area of forested hills with these terraces of fig trees and carob trees and walnut trees running up to the forest, and you lose yourself in these forests, and suddenly you'll emerge and you'll find yourself overlooking on a canyon, overlooking a bay, and it's just spectacular. And then you'll hike down the bay, go for a quick swim in a hidden beach. And you're back on trail again.
Okay, so you can do that, or you can do that, some of that kind of stuff within that 4 day challenge thing you mentioned again.
Exactly.
Anything else in terms of? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's some walks I'd really love you to think of going on. One is the Sant Josep de Santalia. Santalia is the highest mountain, the highest peak. It's only 480 metres high. But still, that is a walk. If you walk it, you can do it in about 5 hours. It's 14 kilometres. But when you get up to the top of Santalia, you see the whole of South Ibiza spread out before you. It's spectacular. You see all the irrigated fields. You see the wild conifer forests up above and right down to the coast.
Wait a minute, are you walking on a trail or climbing a mountain?
You're walking on a trail. No, it's a gentle enough trail. I mean, it is a mountain, but it's, you know, it's a trail. It's not. It doesn't require any rock climbing skills. Otherwise, there's some nice guided walks, because a lot of this is through like tiny little old cart trails and farmers' trails, farmers' paths. So it can be good to have a guide. There's a man called Toby Clark. He's got a website called walkingibiza.com, and he will lead a walk anywhere for about €125, but that's up to 8 people. So if a group of people, you know, spread your money, and that includes transfer from wherever you are to the start of the walk. But he also, every Friday, he does group walks. You just turn up, you pay a tenner, and they start in winter at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'd recommend going in winter to Ibiza. You know, going spring, autumn, summer can be very hot. The walks, though, in summer will start either at dawn or at sunset.
What's the weather like in winter?
Mild, like, you know, it's not going to be Canary Island warm, right, but it's going to be plenty warm that you're going to be wearing able t-shirts most of the day and then maybe a jacket at night.
Okay, well, listen, Moncon, finally, it's working, is it? I mean, this change of the last 10 years or so, and this is like everything you've mentioned here is not the kind of in one disco to the next rave to the next DJ to whatever. It's the other side, and the other side is well worth checking out. It was always there.
Yeah, it was always there, and I can't claim that the transformation has happened entirely, but I'm pointing out the places that are undergoing that transfer at the moment.
Right, okay, fair enough. A beat that is. Moncon McGann, of course it is. Moncon, once again, thanks a million for dropping in.
Thank you, Dave. Dave Fanning on 2FM.